I have the great pleasure to introduce to you someone whom I met this morning, and already I feel that we're kindred spirits. Judge David E. Hardy was appointed to the bench by Governor Kenny Groom in January 2005. Prior to his appointment, Judge Hardy was an elder and disability law attorney with the law firm of Hardy and Woodman. Judge Hardy served as the presiding judge of the 2nd Judicial District in the Family Division. So it gives me great pleasure to ask Judge Hardy to bring words of welcome. Judge Hardy.
Good morning. Welcome to Reno. I love being a judge for reasons that I should not admit. My jokes are funnier. People feel compelled to laugh. And for a 2-minute welcome to Reno, I was just applauded. That's great. I have very little substantive to say. It's clichéic. Many representatives of host cities will thank their associations who choose to train in their respective cities. Thank you for being here, for stimulating our economy, for leaving some of your dollars while maintaining the odds in favor of children. I met Judge Kruzic, so briefly, I don't know if his last name is Kruzic or Kruzic. I felt the same warmness for him that he described for me. If he is emblematic of your association, through his warmth and his passion and his professionalism, I have sorely missed the opportunity to be part of you. As I looked at your organization, I was moved by your vision, the vision of resolving conflict through the use of non-traditional methods of dispute resolution, the introduction of the social science benefits of coordination, evaluation, education. May you enjoy your day today and tomorrow, personally, but more importantly, for the thousands of people that together you serve, who need you to be inspired and informed by your short time together. If you have some off time in the evenings, or if you stay Sunday, there are great things about Reno and the Sierras. Phil Bouchard has been a member of your organization for a very long time. We're proud that he's our the director of our mediation program. He can answer questions, whether it be about Virginia City or the lake or Truckee or the Riverwalk or the Automobile Museum. Restaurants, I understand that there's some effort to identify restaurants. We have some judicial officers from our district participating today from 2 to 5. They will introduce a program that we've implemented to assist with our self-represented litigants. They're available for questions. Welcome. Enjoy your conference, and thank you for the work that you do on behalf of families and children.
Thank you very much, Judge Hardy. We really appreciate you being here and bringing those very kind words of welcome. Dr. Marcia Klein Pruitt is going to address us next on children, courts, and conflict, current research and application for practice. Marcia is an AFCC member, an AFCC longtime member, and I also have the great pleasure of having Marcia on the board. She's a good friend, but she is an incredible scholar. Dr. Marcia Klein Pruitt is the Makonda Brown O'Connor Professor at Smith College and the School of Social Work in Massachusetts. Dr. Klein Pruitt has trained legal and mental health professionals throughout the country and Canada. She has served as a commentator on radio and television news. She was the director of child and adolescent programs at the Consultation Center, at Yale-affiliated Center for Prevention and Intervention Research Programming. She has more than 20 years of clinical experience with individuals, couples, families, and children, and is trained in both family therapy and divorce mediation. Dr. Klein Pruitt has written over 50 articles, chapters, and reviews, and is co-author of the publication Your Divorce Advisor, A Lawyer and Psychologist's Guide through Legal and Emotional Landscape of Divorce, which was published in 2001. I could go on and on and on because she is such an incredible woman. I am simply going to turn the program over to Marcia, and you'll be, I think, delighted with the presentation. Marcia.
There, can you hear me? Great. Well, Amy, I was thinking about it as you were talking, and I like being a good friend and an incredible scholar, but I think I'd rather be an incredible friend and a good scholar. So, to those of you out there who are my incredible friends, welcome, and to those of you who are yet to become friends, welcome. It's very nice to be here. I was, like many East Coasters, up yesterday morning at about 4 o'clock in the morning, unable to fall back asleep on the time difference, and I figured I would look around, and I took the back elevator because it was closer to my room, and it plopped me right into the middle of the casino. And there I was at like 4:30 in the morning, and everything was buzzing, and lights were going, and things were happening. And being the really serious scholar that I am, all I could do was walk around and say to myself, "Toto, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore." But the culture shock has worn off, and I, too, am moved by the beauty of the mountains outside and the warmth of the people that I've met here. So very glad to be here. And today we're going to be talking about triaging family court services and an intake screen and new services. If you thought that I was going to be talking about father involvement or young children overnight or randomized interventions, which I usually talk about, now is your chance to try and find the spa. You don't have enough time to get a massage, but you probably have enough time to find the place if you go right now. It's quite a little maze. But see what my tour brought me? I found everything. So if you have any questions, come talk to me. Listed up there are the Connecticut folks who at the court and who really put this screen and do all the work involved in it. Is Deb Kulak here this morning? Hi, Deb. Could you stand up so everyone could see you? Deborah Kulak is one of the names up there. And if after this talk you get excited about what you might do in your home territory with a similar triaging instrument, Deb is the one to find. If you have questions about the research, you should come talk to me. I think it's safe to assume that most of you are not here because you're research geeks. Is that a good assumption? How many people are either research geeks or closet research geeks? Research geek wannabes. Ooh, there's a handful of you. Well, we are a relatively small group at ASBC, and there's safety in numbers. So if I don't know you, please make sure you find me and introduce yourself later. But I love research because research tells a story, probably better than anything else. Clinical vignettes are useful, but research can tell a story from beginning to end. And it can help you, if you're a mental health person, it can help you tell a story to attorneys and to a judge in a way that moves them. If you are a lawyer, it can help you tell a story that builds your case. We can convince judges, we can convince funders, we can convince lawmakers, and using the media, we can convince the public. So I think it is all about telling stories. And the story that I'm going to tell today is a really simple one. It began with this.
And this.
And it had this happy ending. Now, I bet many of you mediators and lawyers would rather be the cartoon character at the end. I'm hoping you would be. And what I'm going to do is use the data that will tell you the story of how we got from points A and B to point C in Connecticut. And so that's what's exciting about research. It's not just that you get a paper occasionally that has some good data in it. It's that you can look at what you're doing clinically, legally, and learn a whole lot from it that not only builds your case, but teaches you a lot about what you're trying to do. And so I'm going to use this pile of data today that's sometimes going to trip me up because there's a lot of it, and I'm going to try and get a lot of it across to you. And if you at any point don't understand something, just put your hand up. I don't have time to take questions right now, but I will go back and clarify if something needs clarifying. I do want to say before I start that we're talking about a screen instrument and new services. And the screen instrument was actually designed by a group here at AFCC, and I want to make sure that they get credit because Peter and Robin are here, and Robin Deutsch, you all know Peter, and Janet Johnston and Andy Shepherd also were instrumental in developing this screen, which Connecticut then implemented, and I have the pleasure of trying to evaluate. So here are the data. I told my husband recently, I'm obviously not going to change the world with my research, so I'm going to start small. I'm going to keep using my red pencil, and on every student and every faculty who says, here is the data, I'm going to scrunch it out and say, data is plural. And so when I die, that's what they're going to remember research and me about. I figure I can at least get that across in my lifetime. So here are the data. The screen was an instrument that was developed as a triaging instrument. When families came into the family courts in Connecticut, the family court counselors would fill out this questionnaire that talked about the family demographics, their history in the legal system, their mental health history, whether they had any history of addictions, of violence, of child abuse, what was the relationship between the parents, the conflict, cooperation, general communication patterns. And if you answer a number of questions in each category, the questions sort of plop you out at a category. So you might be low to moderate conflict or medium conflict or high conflict. And after you have several categories about conflict and violence and safety and cooperation, it would refer you or recommend what service you could be moved into. So I'm going to say a little bit more about that, but that's the screen that I'm going to be talking about throughout this. Before the screen, there was no universal tool for family services, and there were two kinds of services available. There was mediation, and there was a comprehensive evaluation. After the screen, this new screen was instituted at the same time as two new services, the Conflict Resolution Conference, which is a blend of mediation and negotiation strategies. And the family counselor's goal is to help the parties reach a resolution of their own making. But it is different than mediation. The counselor may direct the process, they may obtain collateral information, and they offer suggestions as well as recommendations. Attorneys are often present during the conference. It's very similar to what I used in my collaborative divorce project years before, although I wasn't smart enough to give it a fancy name like CRC. But it was to bring the parties and the representatives together to settle something that wasn't settleable previously. An IFE, or issue-focused evaluation, is a process of assessing a limited issue. So you don't have to do a comprehensive evaluation, but maybe the family is really stuck at whether to pull the child out of public school and put them in private school. Or maybe they're stuck on whether dad is really capable of giving the child the medication that he or she needs. And so they come into the court to help get resolution for this one issue. Those are the two new services that were added to the previous two, and the screen was instituted. Now, my evaluation was, how does the screen work? Are the screens being used consistently and similarly across districts? One of the dangers of something like this is that it will be instituted very unevenly, and that we will continue to have another sort of dual system of justice. Another question is, are the new services being utilized? And probably of most interest was, has the screen / new services, I could call it SNS, and then be an insider like AFCC and CSSD in Connecticut, I could have my own little letters to use. So I may call this screen of new services, or I may call it SNS. But did it affect agreement rates? How about settlement rates? Lower rates of return to the court? Did people come back within the year? And did they spend less time in service and or in the system as a whole? And we also asked, did it make any financial difference to the courts? As a secondary set of analyses, I was interested in what can we learn from this screen about the vulnerable populations we're most worried about. What could we learn about our highest conflict families, about our families who are involved in domestic violence or child abuse, our unmarried folks, and our pro ses? How would a screen like this help you do that? As a control group, we used about 1,100 families who were referred for service before the screen was ever introduced, before staff were trained in it. So we went back to 2004, and I took 6 months of data. There was about a year and a half period where the screen and the new services were rolled out across the state. There were pilot areas. There were times when there was training. Finally, everybody was up and running. And I didn't want to look at some of the muddier waters. So I looked at January to June 2006, which was a year after the introduction of the screen, when everything was actually functioning. And I was going to compare data from those two time periods. And we started with about 1,261 families. Our actual sample was only about 800 or 900 by the time we really cleaned it up in all of its manifestations. So some of the analyses only have 800 or 900 folks, and it's still a wonderful sample for this kind of research. The data sources were the screen instrument itself, but also any data that we could pull from the system-wide database. There was sometimes information about domestic violence, or there was information about families that was not sort of in one place. There are other data that are in one place in the state, and we pulled from that. We also used court records. We started on the computer files and then went to the actual files in the actual courthouses and pulled the individual files to get more accurate information. We designed supervisor surveys and had the 13 supervisors who supervised the approximately 100 family service counselors for the state, and they filled out a whole lot of information. And then we did a cost analysis using input from all the family services counselors. Here was the evaluation plan. First, I'm just going to put this up here. I should mention, your handouts have some changes in them. I have maintained the rationale that in order to get this stuff in time to Candy, you have to like race it in, and usually you start really thinking about your talk after you've put it together for Candy. So some of the slides are not there. Some of your slides have changed a little bit. Some of them have been cleaned up a tiny bit. So you can follow along about 80% of the time. I know you have this one. It again just lists the variables that we're going to be looking at. First thing in the qualitative assessment was looking at each item in the screen and looking at its correlations to the overall category. So if a category such as couple communication had several questions about cooperation and several questions about conflict, I was interested in which of the items was most highly related to the overall variable. Because if those are the variables that were going to determine service recommendation, it would be useful to figure out which exact items are most highly related to the pathway we start sending families on. Because maybe you wouldn't have to do a whole screen. At some point, we could actually take the most important items and figure we could do a shorter screen. So for those of you who want to implement it in your counties, you could benefit from what Connecticut did by figuring out how to do what they've done and do it shorter. One of the things we found is that family conflict was most highly associated with the number of times a family had been in court. And it wasn't about their relationship. You could most accurately tell whether someone was going to be high conflict based on how many times they had already shown up in court and based on their prior involvement with family support services. Not a real surprise, but a useful two questions. The strongest correlate of parent communication category was level of cooperation. Conflict was actually much more widespread, and as you'll find out as I talk, had many more meanings, but cooperation was zeroed in on as the strongest correlate in general of how our counselors thought about parents communicating. And mental health and domestic violence issues were highly related to the complexity of the case. If one or more parents had significant history or current mental health issues, if there was domestic violence in the case, then the counselors rated it as a very complex case. Those were the two variables that immediately zero in. Again, not surprising in part, this is a validity test to make sure that the screen is measuring what you want it to measure. If these things didn't come out like this, we would worry about what exactly we're measuring. So how does that relate to the service selection or the recommendations at the end? Well, the correlated categories and the individual questions were we just looked at correlations, and what we found is that families were most likely to be referred for a comprehensive evaluation when the counselor rated them as having disparate views. As soon as they heard both parents' stories, and they're very different, boom, they're likely to wind up in comprehensive evaluation, even after a much more extensive evaluation and thought process. So if you want to sort of think about, is this a good family to wind up in comprehensive eval? The more different they are in the beginning, you probably have your red flag bright and colorful right in front of your eyes. Second, cooperation as compared to conflict had the strongest association with mediation. Low conflict, medium conflict, high conflict families all were sent to mediation. But people who had no cooperation were not. So it was actually cooperation that distinguished mediation, which I think is very important. When you read the literature, all we talk about is conflict. Turns out conflict isn't as clear a measure, an indicator, as can this family cooperate? If so, they're more likely to be sent to mediation, and in fact, they're more likely to do okay in mediation. This just talked about, I wanted to make sure, again, that justice was served fairly equally across districts. So we did this extensive data analysis, which I'm not going to say a lot about, but for those of you who did raise your hand as research geeks, you probably will appreciate this information. We looked across the screens to see if there was any missing data and checked it by items and by locations to see if there were any patterns. Did any court counselors tend to leave certain types of data out? And we looked at deviations. One of the reasons the screen was acceptable in Connecticut is because it doesn't just tell you if you are high on A, low on B, and moderate on C, you get referred for mediation. It recommends that, but then the counselor gets to decide whether they agree with that or whether they really think the family should be in a different service. And they can change it. I called it a deviation, but they have to explain in writing why they deviated so that the supervisors can go back and check all the deviations and check what their counselor's patterns of decision-making are. And we could figure out whether the screen had some weaknesses in it or the counselors have some weaknesses, or some combination of both. And so there was a very intensive process of checking all of that out. And we looked at deviations in category. We looked at location. I even looked at, for every category and every location, did certain areas tend to deviate high or low? Are some areas harder on families and some areas easier on families? And after doing that, we found there were actually no systematic differences in missing data, and there were no deviations that were either serious enough or systematic enough and regular enough that we had to do a whole lot of follow-up. There were a few places that the counselors and supervisors, that the supervisors went back to their counselors and said, we have something we need to work on. But there was nothing major, which gave us a sigh of relief, but also was very exciting to find out. So now we know our screen is working well and working across all these very different districts. For those of you not familiar with Connecticut, we have the inner cities, we have the suburbs, and we have the suburbs and the rural areas being some really poor farm areas, and we have some of the richest counties in the country. So Connecticut, small state though it is quite disparate and diverse. So the fact that this was true was a very good sign of how smart our AFCC designers really are. Next, I looked at the disposition of all cases into service. So in the control group, that is the group before the new services and the screen, 62% of families were sent to mediation and 38% for evaluation. After the screen and new services, it went down in mediation to 31%. And CEs went up 2%, which was not significant. So what we see is that there's a drop in mediation, and if you look, it's equally divided between the new services. So in fact, when we only had mediation and comprehensive evals, mediation was a little bit of a dumping ground, or I should say an experimental ground. Anybody who needed something got mediation. But after the screen and the new services, it was determined that about a third of those families could have done better in the new services, and in fact were split up across all the districts into these services. Now, the supervisor surveys were conducted twice, and I examined the types of supervision that were given, the monitoring that was occurring, how satisfied or dissatisfied the counselors were. This is really important, because when we introduced this as a new screen tool, do you think these counselors jumped up and down for joy and said, oh, thank you, we love change? Absolutely not. There was hell to pay, right? They didn't want to change. They were worried about their autonomy being taken away. They were worried that someone was going to be breathing over their necks. They were worried about all kinds of things. So we wanted to know how they felt about it. We wanted to know how difficult it was to implement. What if they loved it, but it was so time-consuming and difficult that we didn't gain a lot? And what did they think they needed training needs in? Basically, it was determined using this, I'm not going to get into a lot of detail, but certain supervisors were given some feedback to work with their staff on, but our supervisors were all out there. They were monitoring both in individual meetings, in group. Sometimes they were actually watching the screen being given. Sometimes they were just checking in. They had very different styles, but they were all doing something regularly. And we found that the staff had, in fact, adapted. They were quite satisfied. I wouldn't say they were overwhelmingly enthusiastic, but they were very satisfied. Very satisfied. And they thought that it was not too difficult to do. It was important to do this twice. It obviously was a lot easier for them the second time we did the questionnaire, and they raised some good questions. Sometimes it wasn't about their training. Sometimes it was about something we needed to do different systemically. And so a lot came out of that. And most importantly, all the research I do in a community is done in a way that the community gets on board and takes some ownership for it. So by doing this and really keeping all the supervisors involved at every level, they didn't feel like they were actually having less authority and responsibility. They felt that we were looking to them and that they were being given a tool to help them do their jobs easier. So they were won over. Okay, agreement rates. The couple reaching an agreement. Oops. The control group, 67% for the initial service. The first time they came in, it went up 70 to 74, a significant 7%. All services. Families might have come back in the year that we followed them. For most families came once, many came twice, a much smaller number came three times, and then there were a few families that came four times. And what we find is that agreement rates, if you look at where they changed, they were about the same for the first service or all services, but it was all through mediation. And couples reached agreement 12% at a 12% greater rate after the introduction of the screen. Agreement rates for comprehensive evals didn't change at all. Thus, by screening out some families into other types of services, it seems that those who were referred into mediation were better able to avail themselves of that service. You also notice that both IFE and CRC, which has no control groups, had agreement rates that were higher than mediation in the control group. So what it looks like, again, is another sign that the new services are meeting people's needs. The increase in agreement for the first service suggests that the screen is actually helping to triage families into more appropriate services for them the first time they come in. Since the agreement rate is comparable across the original two services and all four services, if you look at CE and initial, these are the original two, and then we also looked across all four, and it averages out to something very similar. It would seem that the screen, rather than the new services, contributed to the increase in agreements. Okay, return rates. 24% of the control group returned to court for additional services, but only 14% of the experimental group returned. Statistically significant 10% drop in return rates. The experimental group, I should mention, I looked overall, I looked at first service, second, third, did not have anyone, no one returned for a fourth service. But 14% of the control group families returned a fourth time. So not only was there a lower return rate, but there was a fewer return rate in the experimental group. An interesting subgroup are the families that don't settle after the first service and then return. We not only could look at this, but we could divide it, and I didn't make a slide, it was too complicated, between those who returned, who made an agreement the first time, and those who returned, who didn't. Because that latter group is presumably not finished with their conflict first time around. Among that group, the return rate was 34% for the control group, and only 17% for the experimental group. So the overall return rate was attributable to a decrease in returns for mediation. And again, there were fewer returns, and fewer of the people who didn't agree first time around needed to come back over and over. A number of very positive findings. Okay, I'm not going to say any more about that because it gets a little more complicated. Let's look at time and service. So how long were they actually being serviced? That's important, one, because it means court costs, family service counselor costs, and also it's very important to the family's psyche and to their feelings about coming to court. And what do we see? Again, the introduction of the screen coincided with a significantly longer time in the first service. It actually went up 8 days. But that's not a really long actual time. If you think of 8 days, that's a week and a half. So what that means is that people were in service for an extra week and a half, which if you think about a divorcing family, to say they were done November 1st or November 9th isn't a huge difference. but it was statistically different. But it was a much shorter time for those who came in for second service. 20 days is actually 4 work weeks, right? 5 days a week. So it was like a whole month less for those who came back for a second service. So it took a little longer time to get families through their first service, but then the returnees, I think that's a word, I'm going to use it, the returnees found the process more streamlined. When we assess families in their second service, the experimental group clearly were 20 days less. When I looked at all subsequent services, first, second, and third, and for those who came back in the control group in fourth, the experimental group actually spent an average of 28 fewer days in service. So the more times we looked, the better the discrepancy between experimental and control group favoring the experimental group looked. Interestingly, the difference, again, was among those who did not reach an agreement. There were no group differences among those families who did reach an agreement the first time around. So the couples who didn't reach agreement, there was a longer time spent first time around, and it didn't bear any fruit right away, but by the second time they came in, it began to bear fruit. And each time got a little better. Next, looked at completing service in a timely fashion. What do you see there? Okay, let me explain this. The court has standards that they try and reach. So they try and finish all mediations within 2 months. It's a standard set by the state that they attempt to reach, and they keep records about how often they reach it or not. There's also a standard of trying to finish a comprehensive evaluation in 4 months. There are standards for the new services as well. But basically, in mediation, CRC, and IFE, although not all families reached the standard, and we didn't always reach the standard, the majority did. However, in comprehensive evals, there was this interesting difference. The control group peaked at greater than 6 months. That is, if we looked at how many families made it out in 2 months, in 3 months, in 4 months, in 5 months, in 6 or more months, and I actually looked at 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I just combined it for the slide, most of the families in the control group, the highest level, finished between 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 months. In the experimental group, it peaked right around 4.5 to 5 months. So while they didn't exactly reach their target, they reached it most of the time within a month of that. And there were many fewer families who were there 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, 11 months, 12 months. The fact that CEs couldn't exactly reach the 4 months, in part, seemed to be explained. It was a function of the length of time that was really needed to gather more extensive data for many of the evaluations. Either the issues were so complex that they just couldn't gather the data that quickly. This is very interesting in terms of a question that we can't answer from this research, but one that I always think about, and I can tell by watching some of you whisper to your neighbors that you probably think about this, but we all know that private evaluations tend to take much longer than that. The question is, could they be done in a shorter time if the business of evaluations was different? Or are these sort of forced into a time frame where they do the best they can as close to the time frame as they can? It's a very important question that somebody should answer and that we all should be aware of, because it has incredible implications not only for individual families, but for class differences, socioeconomic differences, and for the business. All right, then I looked at the length of time between services. So let's say families came in and they did a mediation, and then they were out for 5 months, and then they came back to do an IFE. So maybe the mediation held, but something, there was a hiccup that now needed to be focused in on. Another scenario might be that families came in for an IFE, but 3 months later they were back for a more comprehensive eval. There was a number of ways families could come back. So one way to assess the lasting element of the agreements to figure out whether they were good agreements or rushed agreements is to measure the amount of time that would pass between services, right? Because we'd expect a longer time to mean a more holding agreement. So we chose 6 months to use as a reference point for whether the issue in service was likely to pertain to the just completed service or new issue. And that was based on clinical inference from input of these very sophisticated counselors, supervisors, and deputy directors, and everybody put their heads together and said that was a reasonable time to choose. It was somewhat arbitrary, but it was a clinical guesstimate. Significant differences, as you can see on this slide, exist between group for the number of months between services. And what a difference. If we looked at the 6-month standard, 42% of the experimental group reached that compared to only 14% of the control group. The control group had a much higher percentage of families. I also looked at the other side of this, who returned in less than 6 months. So the experimental group seems to be returning for new issues, developmental changes, changes in the family structure and constitution, while the control group seem more likely to return for a continuation of unresolved prior issues or related issues. So again, by inference, this would suggest that the new screen and the services were fostering a better assessment of and better service to the families as they presented the first time around. By the way, this held regardless of whether an agreement was reached in the first service. So families didn't come back in the experimental group for a much longer period than the control group, regardless of whether they reached agreement or not, which suggests that the very process was better in some ways. Not sure what ways, but an interesting finding. Quick returns. We looked at returns that happened within 1 month, because that to me suggested a failure of the agreement and of the service. Families basically said, yeah, okay, this is what we're supposed to do, thank you, and they took it and they left and they came back right away. The control group had a larger percentage of quick returns. You see 35% versus only 12% for the experimental group. The quick return rate, by the way, was highest for families in mediation. We've already noted that the experimental group also stayed in service longer to try and reach an agreement. So maybe that week and a half, which doesn't sound like a lot, made a difference in terms of whether they came back quicker. Something to explore in the future. I'm throwing a lot of data at you. Are you with me? Most of it understandable? Good. Those of you who nodded your heads, thank you. I don't know from the rest of you if you're not nodding or you are lost. Okay, then what I did was go down to every court file of the 2,000 people in the study and search their files to see if motions were made in the case, how many motions and what type. We had 1,830 cases that we could find reasonable enough data, because it wasn't always there, that we could include. There were 5,819 distinguishable motions, and they were collected and divided into child-related motions and non-child-related motions, which were more financial-related and adult-related. I didn't even give you data on that. I'm only giving you data on the child-related because that's what Family Services is focused on. And you'll see this slide, I know in your handouts, that other CR got left behind in the left category. It actually belongs up there on the right, explaining. So there was a custody and access group, which was about, sometimes it was just about custody, sometimes it was about visitation, sometimes it was about visitation and custody either together or indistinguishable. There was another referral to family services motion, and then there were other types of child-related motions that could have been for an evaluation of the child, therapy for the child, restraining order to keep a parent away from a child, appointment of a GAL for the child in the case, or general, they mentioned the child, but we couldn't quite tell what it was about. And there were some of those. Attorneys, you got to clean up what you give us here. Then we can do better research. This is the second study I've done where I have taken students and let them spend an entire summer sitting in courthouses going through files. And one of the first things they say is, God, these things are incomplete. If we did this as learning mental health students, we'd be fired. So it is an interesting comment on our system and would certainly be helpful. Okay, the number of motions. The proportion of cases with more than one motion was equal in the control and experimental group. It was about 65% of the cases, and the average number of motions filed was equal to. The average number was about 5 per case. These are child-related. There were many about economics in-house. What this shows is that the screen didn't really impact the legal culture in any significant way. We saw that agreements lasted better, returns were fewer, they lasted longer, families got out quicker, but it didn't change what happened between the families and the lawyers. One thing did change. The largest number of motions filed for any case was 25 in the control group compared to 15 in the experimental group. So we may have flattened the litigious effect just a little bit at the upper end, but just enough to squish your hat, not enough to reach your head. What about outcomes? Well, child-related motions overall were down 3%. Custody motions dropped 5%, and that was significant. Motions for child-related orders for therapy dropped 1%. And even though that was significant, the numbers were pretty close together. 1%'s iffy. What it says is that the two groups really were different, and then the control group, there was a greater likelihood of being referred for therapy, of the child being referred for therapy, but it was a small difference. Yet the custody motions was an interesting one. So as families were doing better with their agreements, the lawyers were laying off the custody question a little better. Maybe families didn't feel the need to fight over custody in quite the same way because their agreements felt a little better to them, or at least met their needs. I don't know how they felt to them, but it met their needs for the moment. Now, we didn't stop there, being the brave little band of researchers that we were. We tried to figure out whether judicial input changed with the advent of the screen and new services. So we went back and looked at every single motion and figured out whether we could tell that the judge had heard the motion. We couldn't always tell. But when we could, we called it judicial input. And when there was a motion that clearly either got dropped, ignored, pulled back, and didn't go before a judge, then we called that non-judicial input, as sort of a rough estimate of how this is actually affecting judges' time and judges' costs. What we find is that in a modest way, the screen and new services may have contributed to fewer motions being filed that pertain to major child-related issues, where they live, who they live with, where they go to school. Because it didn't change between the groups, but among the motions that did need a judge's input, the experimental group was lower for the average number of motions related to kids and for custody and access motions. So that piece, again, was settled a little better, and it may have had, it impacted child-related motions, but overall it was sort of a smaller impact on judges than perhaps we had hoped. Now, for those of you who are court administrators, what does this mean in terms of dollars and cents? It's great when families feel better and make agreements, but what's it mean for my budget, right? Well, it meant something pretty good. In 2004, we were able to figure out how much we determined cost of all service personnel, all clerical staff. We tracked the numbers and types of services provided in total that occurred during the time frame of the research. We estimated the costs of every type of service. We looked at everybody's salaries. We figured out salary increases. And I used a consulting group who does a lot of this work. This was a group that does this work for the state and has sort of a formula for doing this. And what we found that there was a real cost that we could calculate that reflects the cost of implementing services during the control period versus during the experimental group, and in fact, cost decrease about $300,000. That 2004 is supposed to be 2006. And then we looked 1 year later, it had dropped even further, another $300,000. So in the time we looked, it was over $500,000 cost savings. Can we say that that was absolutely attributable to the screen and new services? No, of course not. We can say it was, specifically better than the control group on the same standards. We controlled for salary increases and cost increases and all kinds of things. But whether families were different, whether other things had changed in the courts, we couldn't control for that. And that analysis could have been done, but it required an extensive level of input from family services, and we sort of ran out of time and money at that point, I think. But someday that would be important to go back to. Other additional work could be done to pull out whether, in fact, this is different. Now, I'm just about out of time, so I'm going to flip through a little bit and just say, this was the summary for those of you who couldn't follow it all. Return rates were cut in half. Agreement rates were up 5%. Returnees benefited from a shorter second service. Fewer came back within a month. Fewer child-related motions. And the court costs were favorably impacted. Pretty good outcomes. I'm going to pass through and give you, you could read this, and I'm happy to answer questions, but I'm just going to tell you some of the things that we found, the highlights. We looked at all the vulnerable populations we talked about. And some of the things we found was one of the interesting things is that you could separate out DV concerns from DV events and that they're not exactly correlated. A lot of people who had events going in their life weren't that concerned about them because they were in the past or they'd been dealt with where the person was in jail. There were other things that hadn't even happened, but the concerns were present. And then there was a combination. And so one of the ways that you can use a tool like this is to begin extracting some of the seeming ambiguities and the things that don't quite make sense when stories seem to have two endings. We looked at why not all partners who had domestic violence in their lives were sent over to a comprehensive evaluation. A lot of people say, what do you mean there was domestic violence and they weren't in a comprehensive evaluation? What do you mean they were in mediation? You can use this screen to track why and how the issues, the concerns, and the events came together to lead to a choice of mediation or comprehensive evaluation. And it's not always clear-cut. So when people stand up and say, this should be like this and this should be like that, they are not looking at the clinical nuances in a way that you can with a screen like this. So, let me get to the end here. Child abuse, never marriage. Turns out that this screen was equally effective with never marrieds and with pro ses. Agreement rates, in fact, got a little better for pro ses with the advent of the screen and the new services. It provided a lot of information about child abuse and domestic violence, when they happened hand in hand, when they didn't, when were weapons involved, when was it just pushing and shoving, and how do you lay that across what services they had, whether they reached an agreement, and when they came back. That's the story. The story doesn't stop at point A. It goes A, B, C, D. And we found that our unmarrieds not only completed the services in equal time, but they actually did a little better. They reached higher levels of agreement once the screen new services were coming. So this didn't hurt the vulnerable populations. It wasn't, people weren't rushed through in a way that those were most worried about had an injustice done to them. If anything, it helped. My final thought. No, that's one way I know my time's up. This is how you use a tool like this. It gives you great outcome data, gives you an argument for your staff to keep doing what they're doing or do it better or do it well, and it teaches you a lot about what you're not doing so well, what you could do better, which staff are ready for promotion. So it gives you all kinds of important information. Hope you learned something from this. I'll take questions at the break, and thank you for your attention.